Welcome to this special episode of Las Vegas Weekly's Second Helping Food Podcast. I'm Leslie here with Genevieve and Brock, and we're excited to talk about what might be the all-time king of summer cookouts and a dish that Vegas has always done really well. But before we get to that, we want to thank you for listening, whether this is your first Second Helping or your 12th. That's right. We started this podcast 1 year ago this month, and we've had a blast talking to each other about food and restaurants in Las Vegas, speaking with other chefs and other experts on the local scene, even other writers and podcasters. And we're looking forward to another year's worth of exploring Vegas cuisine and just obsessing over food in general. If you've been coming along for this ride, we really appreciate your listening and subscribing and rating and reviewing our show. Thanks for your support and happy anniversary to us.
Wow. Congratulations to us. It seems like it was only yesterday that we were launching Second Helping with a summer episode all about hot dogs and the ballpark, changing menus with seasonal ingredients in the Vegas vegan food landscape. It's been a lot of fun to tackle these different topics each month and talk about why we're really what we're really craving at the moment and where we can find the best bites in Las Vegas. Like you said, summer is here, and for a lot of people, that means it's time for the perfect juicy burger, whether you're grilling it in your own backyard or zipping through your favorite drive-thru. Now, Leslie, we've talked about this a little before. Isn't it true that you have a very specific taste in burgers?
That is true. I have to clarify, though, it is a very specific taste. That doesn't mean it's necessarily good taste, and I will be the first person to say that. Burgers, to me, are really nostalgic, and I grew up with, like, a very specific type of burger, i.e. mostly fast food, but also, like, a diner burger. So I don't love a really fancy burger. I just think it's unnecessary, and if I'm going to eat meat, I'd rather have a steak. And when it comes to my burger, I just like a simple, you know, kind of messy, satisfying burger that doesn't have a lot of fluff going on. What about you, Brock?
I agree with you. I think that there really are just two kinds of burgers. You call it a diner burger. I would call it a bar burger.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. But I think they're the same thing, right? Usually the meat patty is a little thicker. Maybe it's cooked on a grill or some other way besides like a flat top grill,
right?
And definitely larger, and they're going to put some more stuff on it, maybe like some kind of a special sauce. But I'm with you. I don't like the fancy burgers very much. And that's interesting because Las Vegas is kind of the home of the fancy burger. It doesn't exist now as much as it used to, but for a while there, every hotel on the strip had this fancy burger bar type of place where they had different proteins and different crazy topping combinations. And celebrity chefs like Gordon Ramsay and Guy Fieri and Bobby Flay were opening these places all the time. And not all of those places have survived. So maybe the fancy burger trend slowly drifted away. Maybe when Shake Shack came to Las Vegas, then that was kind of like the resurgence of the more simple style of burger.
Right. I feel like we live in the wrong city because I also like plain burgers. I mean, with cheese, but, you know, nothing crazy. I don't know if you guys ever watched the show Parks and Recreation. I recently just rewatched the show, like the whole thing. And there's a character in there, Ron Swanson, who eats a lot of meat. And he has a burger cook-off with another character. And he basically throws down a bun with meat, and that was his burger. And I feel like that's me. I just want the bun and the meat, and nothing too fancy to go with it. No crazy sauces, nothing like that.
Yeah. That being said, I still feel like there's a place for the special, like, fancy burger. I do really love Burger Bar by Huber Keller. That was like my first introduction into like a refined fancy burger. And, I still love that place. I know there's other ones out there that I like, but, I'm more of a Shake Shack person when it comes to like the level below. And I know, Genevieve, you're an In-N-Out person.
Yes. I have this argument all the time with a friend about Shake Shack versus In-N-Out. I used to love Shake Shack when I lived in New York. I think we've discussed this before, but the longer I live out West, the more I think that I might be an In-N-Out girl. I don't know. It's consistent every time. It never disappoints. It's excellent meat to bun ratio. I just had an In-N-Out today in preparation for this podcast. So I just kind of reaffirm my belief that I think it really is the burger for me.
How do you get your In-N-Out burger? I feel like that's really important. Like, do a double-double, because I think a single is not enough meat.
I do a double single. I don't like a lot of cheese, but just that one cheese. So I do a double single and grilled onions.
Nice. And
I just do the standard double-double with raw onions. Mm-hmm. Although I've been instructed by other In-N-Out devotees, including our interview subject on today's show, that the way that you got to do it is with grilled onions and add the chopped chili peppers, which is not something that has always been available at In-N-Out, but now it is. It's those little yellow, I don't even know what they're called, but you can get those chilies in your on your In-N-Out too.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah. To me, that kind of throws off the equation though, but I'm just so, like you said before, Genevieve, In-N-Out is so consistent. It's really always the same. And the structure of it, how they put that thing together, that's why I love it so much. Like the different textures that you get when you bite, the lettuce is always really crisp. The bun is always soft on the outside and like hard toasted on the inside.
Yeah.
I don't even know how they do that. I've tried to do that at home and messed it up several times.
Yeah. The one thing with Shake Shack I really love is the hinge bun. I think it's really brilliant because I can be kind of a messy eater, and even like my In-N-Out, like all the stuff just kind of like slides out. But that was the one thing I really love about Shake Shack. I mean, that hinge bun is pretty brilliant.
I don't even know if people know about that. I didn't know about that for a long time. So a hinge bun, we're talking about like a hot dog bun. It's not completely cut. Right.
Yeah. Right. Still right.
Connected on one end.
Mind blown.
Yeah.
Well, it has the same effect of, you know, you eat an In-N-Out burger, they wrap it up in paper so tight that you have to really work if you want to take it out of there and eat it without the paper.
It just slides out. Like,
right. Right.
Yeah.
Paper. So yeah, those Shake Shack guys are pretty smart the way that they do things.
Although I don't know, like I think Shake Shack, I mean, obviously price point wise, Shake Shack is a little more expensive than In-N-Out. And probably that's part of the satisfaction of eating In-N-Out is that you really are getting a fresh tasting burger for a really good price. There's, you know, psychologically that really kind of like gives you, you know, a little bit of an advantage, right? Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Not that I don't love Shake Shack. It's just that price point wise, Shake Shack is definitely higher than In-N-Out.
Yeah. Well, I didn't eat a burger in preparation for this discussion, mm-hmm. but I did go back into the Las Vegas Weekly archives because there was a time not too long ago where every few years we would do a big burger issue so that we could put a big, beautiful burger on the cover, and everybody picked up that magazine and loved reading about that. So I found one of the first ones, May 2013, and it was basically 10 burgers that we picked, 10 of the best burgers in Las Vegas. Do you want to know what they were?
Yes,
I do.
That's a lot of burgers. Fuku Burger is on this list. Holstein's at the Cosmopolitan, which was only a few years old at that time, I guess. Nine Steakhouse, of course, formerly at the Palms, doesn't exist anymore, but they had a really great burger at the bar. Burger Bar, like you said, Leslie, really the place that kind of set the trend for the gourmet burger spot. Bocce Burger. Is Bocce Burger still a thing in Las Vegas?
It's gone, yeah.
I miss Bocce.
I miss it too. It was so different. Like they had Fuku Burger also has, you know, those Asian flavors in all of their sandwiches, but Bocce Burger had so many different kinds of, like they had that Vietnamese banh mi burger. That was my favorite.
I think that was the first place I ever had egg on my burger. If I remember correctly, they had an egg, like an egg burger, which, mm-hmm. you know, a few years ago, that was weird. Like, you know.
Yeah.
But now it's everywhere.
Every burger place had puts an egg on it. Honey Salt was on this list back in 2013. They still have a pretty great burger. Gordon Ramsay at Planet Hollywood. A place called Rambo's Kitchen. I'm pretty sure that's not around anymore, but This is very, this is very obviously a Jim Begley discovery. Rambo's Kitchen. They had a burger that was basically a Juicy Lucy with the cheese stuffed inside the patty. I don't know how I feel about that. That's a little weird to me.
Wait, the cheese is inside the patty?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's basically like a double patty with a whole bunch of cheese inside it, and then they kind of seal it up around it like a dumpling.
A meat dumpling.
A beef dumpling. It sounds weird now. Now that I've described it that way, it does not sound great. LBS Burger, which used to be at Red Rock Resort and was from the same people that do Holstein's, they were on this list. This list is too long. PJ Clark's. Did you guys ever go to PJ Clark's at the Forum Shop? Oh man, that was a pretty good, that was a pretty good burger. PJ Clark's is like a real famous New York kind of touristy brasserie. And they were known for having like crazy cheap oyster happy hours, a really good cheeseburger. But it was like what we're talking about, very simple, just like bacon, cheddar cheese. I'm looking at these pictures and I'm getting very hungry.
Is there a price point where you guys would not, like, I will not pay that much for a burger?
Depends on what it is. Like, I don't like fancy burgers, but, like, you know, if it's, like, a Kobe or Wagyu, like, from Burger Bar, I know those are crazy expensive. Mm-hmm. And, like, I might splurge and split it with somebody. Like, I'm not going to eat the whole thing myself and do that. But if someone wants to go... go havesies, I would probably do that.
I definitely
$40 is a little much for a burger. Yeah. $40 is like, no.
Unless it's like big enough to cut in pizza-shaped wedges and share it with like six people, then that would be okay.
Yeah.
Have you guys cooked burgers at home very much? Because I get cravings for them, but I would that's one thing I would rather go get from a place that I know they're going to do what I want versus try to make it myself and screw it up.
I only ever cook turkey burgers at home. My dirty little secret. I never really cook red meat. So I don't ever cook any meat burgers, but I do eat a lot of turkey burgers at home.
What do you do to your turkey burgers to make them delicious? Because turkey meat can be a little bit dry and not the most palatable.
Yeah, I just season it with garlic and salt and pepper, and I throw in some Parmesan, like grated Parmesan cheese inside the burger, and maybe some, you know, sliced onions, whatever I have on hand, and just kind of season it up that way. And it's super delicious when it comes out.
That sounds good.
Yeah, but I don't make it just plain. I do put a lot of spices in it, and you know, some shredded cheese.
And I lied, I guess. I make Beyond Meat burgers.
Me too.
Yeah. And you know, like they are good and I have no problem eating them, but they definitely aren't like as satisfying as like going out and getting a real meat burger. But I have no desire to really make that at home. Like Genevieve, I don't really mess with red meat at home. And you know, it's a treat. It's not something, if I get too comfortable and start making that at home, like something's off. So, okay. I'm curious as to what your guys's like favorite local burgers are. Like we've talked about like, you know, the Shake Shacks and the In-N-Outs and the really expensive burgers. But what about like just going and getting, I guess, that bar burger, that diner burger, like Brock and I were talking about?
My favorite local burger is without question Fuku Burger. Mm. That's not a bar. I mean, I guess you can get booze at their restaurants now. You can get a beer, but that's more of a fast food style burger, I think. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit upgraded. But I have really nostalgic connections to their food, just like I do with In-N-Out, because when Fuku Burger first started in Las Vegas, geez, I don't even know, 10 years ago now, maybe. It was just a food truck and they had a really cool style. They were kind of like street food pirates. They would just go park wherever they wanted to. They didn't necessarily get the okay to do so. And they'd start cooking and you'd go out there and order some food. And if you gave them a tip, then they would give you a little jelly treat, a little dessert piece of candy. And they'd all yell tip jelly. And then you'd probably sit on a orange bucket from Home Depot that they had lying around and sit there and eat your pretty messy burger in a parking lot or on a street corner. And it was just a really fun and different thing to do in Vegas when that first started. So now that they have two restaurants, I try to go there as much as I can. And the food still tastes the same as it did back in the old days when it started. I usually get the tamago burger, just a fried egg burger. And yeah, I think that's my favorite, like, Vegas born burger spot.
That sounds good. So Cheesecake Factory is walking distance from where I live. And we sometimes end up going there because I have a teenager who likes that giant menu. I don't love that giant menu. So I will always get either a salad or one of their burgers. So that place is probably one of the, you know, my more frequent burger places.
So yeah, Cheesecake Factory.
I did prepare a little bit for this. So last night I went to Scenic Brewing out kind of like towards Summerlin. And I had one burger there before, but I forget which one it was, but I ordered the barbecue burger last night, and it's called the Battleborn barbecue burger. It said it had pecan wood smoked bacon. It was like straight up like thick cut Canadian bacon. Like it looked like ham. And I don't eat a lot of red meat. I was like, okay, I basically just ordered like a meat sandwich, like meat on meat. But damn, that thing was so good. So I have to shout out, like, Scenic Burger has a really good and really, like, kind of extensive burger menu. And then I think Atomic Kitchen has a pretty solid burger. I like Eureka, where the Beat used to be.
Yeah.
And then kind of like an OG spot is the Dispensary off of Trop. And
yeah, I love that place.
Yeah, they have like a, I think it's like a burger happy hour, and it's like a burger and fries for like, don't quote me on it, but it's like, I think it might be like $8. And that is a really, really good burger. It like ticks all the boxes. So
that's a great pick. That's a classic Vegas burger, because like, unless you've lived here for a while or somebody's told you about that, you would have no way of knowing that this super weird dive bar with like a water wheel that never works and like carpet. It's got carpet. It's a bar with carpet. That's a terrible idea.
Grandmother's home from like the 80s. It's so weird. I love it though. Mm-hmm.
I need to move out of Henderson because I think Cheesecake Factory. Literally, that's like what I can walk to, or like, you know, or that's nearby. I don't think we have anything interesting here like that. I mean, I could be wrong, but.
Well, I mean, you do have Red Robin, which I know a lot of people talk crap about it, but growing up in high school, I loved Red Robin. So I don't know what that says about me. I haven't had it since high school. You know what you have?
A couple of times. It is pretty good.
You know what you have out there, Genevieve? You have Served. And Served makes a delicious burger.
That's a good call.
I have to go back there. I've been there for brunch. I have to have the burger.
It's definitely one of, like, it's a fancier burger, the one that I had. It was just piled high and a little pricey, but worth it. So yeah.
Well, I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, definitely.
Now that we have talked about our favorite Vegas burgers, I think it's time to get anybody listening involved, because we haven't mentioned yet that the Best of Vegas this year is a very special edition. It's the all-time Best of Vegas. So for our annual awards issue, we switched it up this year. We're looking backwards a little bit, and we're going to recognize a lot of, not just restaurants and bars, but other things, everything in Las Vegas that is cool. All of the categories are reader choice this year. The readers get to vote on everything, and there's dozens of different categories. And of course, there's tons of food categories, and you can vote until July 14th. That's the last day at lasvegasweekly.com. And best all-time burger joint is like the first category, of course, leading things off. And there's five multiple choice options in each category. And the burger places are Bocce Burger, Burger Bar, Fuku Burger, In-N-Out, and the last one is kind of a weird pick. It's Bradley Ogden, which is not a burger place, but it was a fine dining restaurant at Caesar's Palace. It was where the Gordon Ramsay pub is now. And Chef Bradley Ogden, his restaurant there was like kind of the first like quote unquote farm to table restaurant in Vegas. And it became pretty famous for local foodie people that they had this off menu burger. I think it was $19 or $20. And you could only order it at the bar. And it was amazing and kind of legendary. So we put it on the list of the five nominees for best all-time burger joint. There's also a write-in option. So if somebody wants to throw the dispensary in there or whatever their favorite place is that we didn't think of, that's on there too. So definitely go vote for the Best of Vegas, LasVegasWeekly.com/Best of Vegas. It's going to be really interesting to see how this thing turns out this year. You guys got any favorites? You think what's going to win? We got some places. I mean, obviously In-N-Out is not just a Vegas place, but it's so popular here. And, you know, people come from out of town to Las Vegas and they always eat In-N-Out when they're in town. So we had to put it in there, but yeah, I don't know. That could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah. I don't know. I already voted. So I vote a secret.
I voted and I don't remember what I voted for. Wait, I'm like, what were the choices again? I think In-N-Out will win. I feel like In-N-Out, like, it's just always going to win. It's going to sweep.
Yeah, probably. There's all kinds of really good categories. It's really hard to choose. There's taco shop, buffet. That's going to be a tough one. Steakhouse, best seafood restaurant, best sushi spot. We really opened it up. We did a lot more kind of general restaurant categories than we usually do when we're doing the Best of Vegas. But it's designed to have like, you know, what is Vegas really good at? We got great Japanese food. We got great Thai food. And all these things are represented in here. You also get to vote for best all-time strip chef and best all-time local chef. That's crazy. I haven't voted yet. I kind of don't want to vote because it's too hard to choose.
It was very hard to choose. Mm-hmm. Very hard to choose. You feel like you're hurting someone's feelings if you don't like them. I don't know. There are some really good choices there. So I'm very, very excited to find out who wins.
So here's a pretty familiar name. Mark Marone has become one of the most visible chefs and restaurateurs in Las Vegas so far this year. Largely on the strength of the success of his delicious graffiti bao, which started out as a concession stand at T-Mobile Arena during Vegas Golden Knights hockey games before Mark opened the restaurant version of graffiti bao in the Southwest Valley. We've talked about him and his food a lot on this podcast and written about what he's been up to in Las Vegas Weekly quite a bit. And he's become even more busy during these strange pandemic times, not only keeping graffiti bao very popular and running smoothly, his team there has also been creating meals for the Delivering with Dignity program. And he's been spending a lot of time as a chef and consultant for two other newish restaurants, Locale and Egg Sammy. What you might not know about Mark, who was the corporate chef for the Tao Group for about a decade before he went out on his own, is that he makes one of my all-time favorite burgers and what I will say is one of the all-time best burgers in Las Vegas. I used to get his burger when I'd go to Tao Beach or Marquee Day Club for an awesome pool party snack. And now he's got this burger on the menu at Graffiti Bao.
You know, you've been cooking in Las Vegas for a long time. I think that you, until recently, are known as a chef who can turn out amazing Asian food, amazing Italian food, with what you're doing on the Strip. And you've carried that stuff into your off-strip projects. But I think the burger on the menu at Graffiti Bao might be a surprise for some people. How did you perfect this burger recipe? Because it really is perfect.
Oh, thanks, man. So, you know, it's same kind of a thing. I've always, you know, even with Tao Group, you know, I always made a point, obviously, you know, as well, like Tao Beach, I always used, I love making burgers, right? For one, so as a chef, you know, I working through my career, I used to get the craziest about going out to eat and the simplest stuff getting kind of just taken for granted and not done well. And I was like, it really frustrated me. So, you know, and then for Tao Beach specifically, it was one of the first higher end venues, you know, working with Tao Group that we had to develop a burger for. And I was like, you know, if we just phone this in and it's not good, being a chef, quote unquote, and putting out a crappy burger is going to be even worse than if you went to some place that, you know, by nobody, you know, random fast food places, not a good burger, you're not going to care as much. So, I put a lot of time and pride into developing that and working on that throughout the years. And I think, you know, I got really into the whole smashing, griddling burgers thing has definitely been, in my opinion, the best version of a burger. And I think, you know, I had a flat top, and when I left Tao, you know, having barbecues in my house all the time, hanging out with everybody. And I had this, you know, electric griddle. And so we were making flat top burgers, and I started getting really into it because I didn't have a whole lot else to do. And I was like, all right, so get a better crust on it, eat a drier beef, but dry aged beef crumbles funny. So I started working on different blends and grinds, and then kind of just hammering out to the point where at my house, we would make these things in the backyard burgers, we call them. It was just like smash the same, basically graffiti bow burger. It was, you know, good burger sauce, Martin's potato bun, some bacon, and a crusty seared burger patty, smashed some onions on it, and American cheese and pickles, and added the pickled chilies in there. And I just kind of like the sweet, the savory, the salty, the whole thing kind of worked. And then, you know, we're graffiti bow, we're steamrolling and doing a roll in the beginning. And I got a sample of Martin's buns in, and I was like, we should make a burger while we're here. We have a flat top, we're doing it anyway. So we made the backyard burger here, and we all kind of looked at each other like, this should just maybe just go on the menu. I was like, kind of like the contrast of, you know, get a kick-ass burger at an Asian restaurant. It's kind of cool. So, you know, we kind of worked on and developed it there, and it kind of was run as a special, and then it became a staple that people kept ordering. So we kind of left it on the menu.
Mm-hmm. It's July now, and people are going to be having a lot more cookouts and grilling burgers, which is also a great way to do a burger. And I think maybe that's what people are used to doing at home more. Sure. What do you think are the advantages of doing it on a griddle versus on a grill?
So I think, I'm a big fan of I do a lot of charcoal, open charcoal barbecuing at home. And I definitely think, you know, when you char grill a burger and you get that nice char on it and the fiery smoke on there, I think it's great. I think, you know, the home cook, the one advice I can give is grilling is not an action sport where you got to keep flipping it, moving it around and doing all kinds of crazy shit with it. It's like, yo, just get cooked on one side, get a good crust, and flip it one more time and that's it. But yeah, I think that a lot of times if you get like a really nice fatty blended burger, it gets a little challenging to grill. It flares up on you. And also, you know, if you don't have a griddle or a flat top at home and you want to do one of those smashed burgers, put a cast iron skillet over a barbecue. The same concept will happen. You cook it right in that. Also works really, really well. If you're going to grill on a grill, getting a little bit of a leaner burger in there is definitely the way to go. So there's a flare up on you. But yeah, I think it holds up better. Personally at home when I char grill them, I usually get, that's when I get like a Kaiser roll, like a really crusty Kaiser roll on there, and it kind of holds up to that char of the burger and definitely creates a more of a steakhouse burger, I call it, I guess is a better way to put it. Get a little coarser grind, a little thicker burger on there, and that when you cook the temp, my opinion, right, that one goes nice medium rare, it's good. Griddle burgers are like in and out, you kind of cook them just through and they're perfect. So but I'm a fan of both. It all depends what you're doing and where you're getting the meat from.
And you gotta like you just said, You change up your gear depending on what kind of burger you're doing. Change your roll, change your cheese.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. You're doing a char grilled burger. Then you get that to me. Like if I'm gonna do like a charcoal grilled steakhouse coarse ground burger, then that's when you get the blue cheese on there. Get like gorgonzola or blue cheese. Get like a peppered bacon, and then you start going a little more bold, big flavors to hold up with that char. It's fun. Listen, that's why I like burgers, man. They're also the most universal thing. You can throw anything on them and do whatever you want with them.
When did you start doing the smashing the onions into the patty? Was that a more recent development, or have you been cooking that way for a long time? Or,
you know, I was for a long time, I was doing the old, you know, as a kid, as weird as it is, like McDonald's burgers when I was a kid was like a special thing for me. You used to get like the two cheeseburgers, and they always had those minced white onions on them. It was like minced white onions, pickles, ketchup, and yellow mustard. And for some reason as a kid, I was like that oniony burgery, weird spongy bun was like, I loved it. And I was, you know, and then as I got older, I was like, how do we kind of reinvent that, but not like that, right? Not being a processed fast food burger. So I was doing the diced onions for a while and they kept either undercooking or overcooking. And then, you know, we had these shaved onions that we used to make the fried onions with. And I was like, they were raw. I was cooking the burger and I kind of took them, threw them on there, smashed them on there, and then kind of went from there. And it just, they kind of dissolve nicely into the meat, get a nice crust on there, and they're good. Yeah, like it's definitely a nice little aromatic touch. So I'm not a fan of the raw onions on burgers anymore. Once you cook them in there, it's kind of changes the game for me.
I was just going to ask you if you're an In-N-Out person, and if so, do you do raw onion or grilled onion? But I guess you answered that.
Yeah, I do the grilled onions on those. And you know, In-N-Out, it's funny. If you notice, none of the burgers I've made have tomato on them. I can't stand tomato on a burger, as weird as that is. I'll do like a tomato jam. I'll do something like that. But like a slice of tomato, to me, every time I eat it, one, it slides out, shoots out the side, and it's just wet. So I always try to avoid that. So I order In-N-Out, man. I get animal style, grilled onions, no tomato, add chopped chilies. That's the secret there. You got to add chopped chilies, man.
I feel like even though Graffiti Bao hasn't been open for that long, it's really become a very prominent part of the local dining scene. I mean, people have really, a lot of people know you already from the Strip, and so they were really excited about your first project out in the neighborhood. But
yeah,
something about that place that has just really caught on fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been fortunate, man. Like it's you know, it was definitely a little nerve wracking. Again, you know, I was having this conversation with a couple other guys the other day where it wasn't the plan to come off the big restaurants on the Strip and go right into like a fast casual serving on paper plates concept. And, you know, just by sheer normal construction delays and things like that, the opportunity presented itself to do it. And I'll be candid, man. Like it took a lot, and it was a little nerve wracking where I was like, this could be a really fun risk. And I think it also could blow up in my face, and, maybe people won't catch on as well. And all of a sudden my credibility gets shot to shit, which, you know, was a little concerning. And I think, eventually though, I believed in the food and the team, and I figured I decided to embrace what it was. And really the concept itself holds a lot of memories of being a kid for me. My father worked in Manhattan right off of Times Square when Times Square was not a place you go to hang out like you do now. It was either strip clubs, dilapidated restaurants, or theaters. And that was it. It was not a nice place to hang out. My father worked on West 42nd Street. So when my mom would drop me off at his office when it was my time to hang out with him, we'd have to drive through Times Square. And I remember seeing all this crazy neon as a kid, not understanding that it was all girls, 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 and whatever else like neon signs they had. And then I used to wait at this Chinese restaurant that was next to his work. And so New York City Chinese food and neon and 80s is always like kind of burned into my brain. And so I decided to go with that route. And I was like, you know, it's an opportunity to kind of recreate that nostalgic feel. And I think that our generation really kind of assimilates with, you know, whether it's the Big Trouble in China, the Ghostbusters theme, or just the neon in general, it seemed to resonate. And I just try to do food that is what you're kind of craving when you're at home. And that tied in with the stories of traveling throughout Asia and doing that kind of stuff and having some authenticity in there, but then also layering in some comfort food that people get. It was a risk. And I'm really fortunate it caught on. And I got to tell you, you know, not that I'm surprised, but the Vegas community definitely does an amazing job of embracing and supporting people trying to do their own thing. And that's the one thing I couldn't be more thankful for, is the support that everyone like you guys and the locals that live here, everyone's been amazing. And it's, you know, we're really fortunate. And the guys here that, you know, like I was saying earlier, there's cooks that definitely took a risk in leaving, you know, quote unquote, comfortable strip jobs to come work with me. And they believed in it. And, you know, it just doesn't benefit just us or restaurant operators and owners when people show such great support. Like there's a lot of Vegas locals that live here that work here every day and are trying to make it work. And it provides jobs for them. And it's a good thing for everybody.
And you've really, really strengthened your ties to the community since all this COVID stuff. You were one of the first restaurants to work with the Delivering with Dignity program, which supplies meals to, you know, the most at-risk people in our community, the people who can't leave their homes to go do food pickups and stuff like that. So thanks for doing that. But that's also a pretty incredible, I mean, you guys are coming in super early and churning out all different kinds of meals, like perfectly packaged little meals for this program before you even get into doing your regular business, right?
Oh yeah. So it's, before we open, it's anywhere from 300 to 600 or 700 meals packed up, ready to go every morning, Monday through Friday. And that was another thing too, that, you know, when this whole COVID thing happened, you know, everyone was closing, some restaurants were trying to stay open. And, you know, I remember looking at the entire team when it happened. I said, hey guys, like what we can shut down now. We have, you know, enough money in the bank technically to close and ride this out and reopen when we're ready and bring you guys back on board. And if you guys aren't comfortable, you want to go on unemployment, I totally understand. What do you guys want to do? And it was like my five core cooks and team members were like, I really need this job. Like, unemployment's not, that was before we even knew about any of the stimulus, didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. And so I said to them, I said, all right, we're going to give it a shot. I don't know what this is going to look like, but let's give it a shot and we'll try. And we would have these meetings, man, every day after we would, you know, we cut down the staff dramatically. I was told the cooks, I was like, you're going to have to prep. You're going to learn to cashier. You're doing everything. We're going to try to make this work. And we would literally get through service, sit down afterwards, and I would be transparent. I was like, this is what it costs. This is what the payroll was today for you guys. This was sales. I can't lose money. And we're trying to ride this out. And we would do it every day, man. We'd go through the numbers and be like, all right, you survived another day. Great. And then, you know, about 3 days or 4 days into that, they laid off, they shut the strip down, right? And that was when all of our friends and our hospitality community immediately didn't have a job. And 2 days after that, they shut the schools down. And I remember being a kid, like, you know, it was, there was the kids that paid full lunch and those kids that, you know, you got the 25 cent lunch, you got the free lunch. And I thought, all I could think of was, where the hell are those kids going to eat? Like, until they catch up with a program for that. So, you know, I was like, all right, here's, we'll give free, we came up with these like fried rice or orange chicken tofu bowls for kids. I was like, we'll do free kids bowls. And then, you know, all of our industry people, our food's pretty cost effective, but let's do 30% off for the industry. And then one by one, each industry, quote unquote, getting shut down. I was like, you know what? Anybody who needs it, come in, you get 30% off. And I was like, if we're open and able to do it, you know, and I kind of said that. I was like, as long as we're able to be open, we'll continue to provide what we can. And then, you know, then the delivery of dignity thing came through and was kind of fruition and created. And that was, that gave some shed, it's some really positive light on the day for everybody. And I'll tell you, man, like even now, a lot of negativity swirling around with this COVID and unknowns, it goes a long way for the team. You'll come through every morning. At least you start your day off on a positive note. You get to produce some meals for people and take care of it. And you know, I just, like I said, and to tie back to what I said before, is this community has been so great to us. It kind of felt like the only option was to at least try to get back to the people that have been, I mean, we have regulars that come in 3-4 times a week and all of a sudden don't have a job. And, you know, they've supported us for so long. The very least we could do is try to get back and support them and help them out a little bit. And it, you know, it seemed to work out well. And it's so far we're still here. So It seems to be working okay.
Yeah. Now you've been keeping busy too with some other projects that you have consulted on other restaurants and become partners on other restaurants. Tell me about Locale and the Egg Sammy.
Sure. So Locale, Andy Hooper, his wife, Jen Hooper, is the vice president of HR for Tao Group. So her and I have been friends for a really long time, and Andy and I have been close for a long time. And when I was leaving Tao originally, you know, we went back and forth with, you know, potentially doing a concept together. I had a bunch of other stuff in the works, so we kind of put it on hold. He opened Locale and with Nicole, and then Nicole kind of went her own direction to start some of her own stuff, and, you know, kind of left a void for him. And it was one of those scenarios where, again, it was right in the middle of this COVID thing. And it was, you know, they happened to be doing pretty well takeout and to go. And the last thing they wanted to do was shut down. And you wanted to keep moving forward. So, you know, I reached out and I went over, we helped them out. We, you know, tweaked some of the menus a little bit and started just servicing that. And then, you know, without even thinking about it, it created another outlet and opportunity for the crew that I have that could use some more hours and some more work. It also gave me the ability to bring some more guys back on board. And you know, ended up working out a deal where, you know, I'll be the chef and do the consulting and create the menus. And now we're kind of in a, you know, working partnership on that. So it's been really fortunate and a lot of fun too, because, you know, listen, Italian's always been near and dear to my heart. And so it's kind of a fun outlet for me to be able to kind of start expressing some fun dishes in a local environment. And where Locale is great. Like Mountain's Edge is such a built-in business of neighborhoods of people that want great Italian food, but you know, it's got to be approachable. And again, I think the whole theme here is keeping a good value for people, whether it's a high end price point or not. They deserve to be getting a value for what they're paying for, especially now that money's tight, man. And I think that the fact that people come to choose to spend their money at any of our venues, we owe it to them to at least give them the true, honest, best value that we can. And that's kind of what we've been trying to do the whole time. And it seems to be, working out well, and it's exciting. And I'm excited to keep kind of progressing the menu over there. And then as far as Egg Sammy, you know, Anthony is the kind of the founder of Egg Sammy, was opened up right before this whole COVID shutdown happened. And then, you know, at the same time, the original goal was to kind of expand that brand. If you notice, like, fast casual style is very similar to Graffiti Bauhaus. You know, and Todd and I really were on board with, we had a plan from the beginning with Graffiti Bau when we designed it, built it to expand it. Like, it's, everything is ready to go and open another venue and open another one. It's all documented, super clean. And the goal for that is to make it either neighborhood restaurants in multiple cities or multiple in one city, whatever it is. It was meant to grow. And we had those systems in place and lined up, and that was what Anthony really wanted to accomplish with Egg Sammy. So it kind of became a natural partnership and progression to, you know, we agreed to truly partner up together and kind of expand that brand as well. On top of that, it's, you know, it's a concept that I've truly believed in from the beginning that, you know, we make all of our own brioche fresh in house every day. We make it, it's really fun. It's a really cool concept. And again, you know, tying into the whole kind of fast casual value driven concept, it really falls in and works pretty well.
I'm still kind of locked into takeout mode, so I haven't made the rounds and tried some of these newer restaurants just yet, even though a lot of them are back open again. What is that? What do I need to eat at Egg Sammy when I go try? What is the, is there like, do you got a favorite sandwich on that menu?
I do. So, you know, I, other than burgers, man, crispy chicken sandwiches have been kind of one of my things for a while. You know, I did all the venues, Tao Beach, Marquee, always put a crispy, especially Marquee, that crispy chicken sandwich, man, was one of our other big, big hits. So I was kind of make a point to incorporate that somehow. And we do a crispy chicken egg sandwich there. It's on our house-made brioche, like pickled brine, fried chicken, fried egg, you know, spicy mustard. It's really, really good. And but if you ask them, I put the, we do a spicy honey glaze per request. That's my go-to. And then we also do like a meat and potatoes, which is like shredded short rib, a waffle hash brown, arugula, pickled red onions on a brioche. It's so good, man.
A waffle hash brown.
Oh yeah.
Yo.
Hey, why not? You got a regular hash brown. I was pressing in a waffle shape to make it more work and more exciting.
Okay, it's time to do the best things we ate this month. I'm going to start because I feel very bad about what I ate. Actually, I've been eating pretty healthy for the last couple months, and this was one of my few splurges. So we got some takeout from a little restaurant called Tomo Noodle and Dumpling. It's in the Village Square Shopping Center, out near Summerlin. And I actually was planning to make like something healthy for dinner this night. And my wife got a ramen craving, and that's the closest place to us that has a decent vegetarian ramen. So I went to get it for her, and I just kind of like, oh, I'll just have this. I'll just order this. Not thinking very much about what I was doing, but it was really good. It was basically like a Hawaiian local plate type of dish with what they call spicy garlic chicken, which is fried chicken with smoked habaneros. And there was some, I got some Kahlua pork and cabbage on the plate. I really went overboard, obviously. But that chicken was so good. It was like perfectly crispy and tender chicken thigh, and had a really good smokiness and spiciness to it. And I got it. There was so much of it. I was like, oh, this is awesome. I can have this for lunch tomorrow. Nope. I ate it all. I ate it all for dinner. I ate the little thing of mac salad. I ate most of the rice. It was a super splurge, and I feel terrible about it, but it was delicious.
That sounds good.
How about you, Genevieve? What was the best thing that you ate?
So the best thing I ate was actually something I made. I've been making ice cream the last month. You know, we had that heat wave last week, and you know, what else is there to do but, you know, hunker down and eat a lot of ice cream. I've been following this food blogger for a number of years. He's American, but he lives in Paris, and he has the most amazing recipes. His name's David Leibovitz, and he has a lot of ice cream recipes. And in fact, he published a book a number of years ago called The Perfect Scoop. I've had an ice cream maker for a number of years, and this year I decided to make one of his recipes. It's a coffee ice cream, which I know you like, Brock. And it has chocolate chips that you melt and you kind of, you know, chop up, and then coffee and this, I don't know if you know what cajeta is, which is basically a, like kind of like a caramel sauce that's made out of goat's milk. I went to the Mexican market and found some, and it's fantastic. So you drizzle the, it's like a dulce de leche, but with goat's milk. It's phenomenal. And I followed his recipe to a T, and it was so good and just super creamy coffee ice cream with just this pieces of chocolate and this caramel thing all over it. It was really good. We ate it in like, I don't know, one sitting. I made a quart and it did not last long. So that was the best thing I made this month, or I ate this month.
That sounds amazing. Well, next time you make that, please let us know.
I will. I want to share my ice cream, but I'm trying to figure out how I can transport it to people's houses without it melting. Because as you know, unlike commercial ice cream, homemade ice cream melts a lot faster because it, you know, it, you don't really, I mean, I guess you could leave it in the freezer for a really long time. You know, it's, there's nothing in it other than, you know, what you put in. So there's no preservatives. So it melts really fast and it doesn't last very long in our house, but I will definitely let you know that recipe is such a keeper.
Leslie, you're up, and you have to do extra good because you weren't here last month to tell us what you ate. So,
well, I have two things then. So the first one is also a summer treat. I did not make it at home though. I went to this place called Philly Freeze Me, and I did not know that like Italian ice is a Philadelphia thing, but apparently it is. So there's a Italian ice place in the Twain Center right next to the old Bagel Mania. And right now they're just doing curbside. So you go, they give you a menu and you order. They also have alcohol infused Italian ice. So I had a peach Bellini and just took it home and laid out by the pool and had my peach Bellini, you know, Philadelphia Italian frozen ice. And that was so awesome. So that was a really great treat. And then I've also been trying to eat kind of healthy and make most of my food at home. So I have, it's so simple. I like shouldn't even say it, but I've kind of like perfected this vegan pesto. The recipe I got, I believe, is from the Post Punk Kitchen, which is a really cool like vegan blog that I follow sometimes. And it's just basil, walnuts, olive oil, lemon, and then you can like add nutritional yeast if you want to. I don't. And then garlic, a lot of garlic, and just throw it in a blender. And honestly, it's such a go-to now that I put it on like anything. So it's great on pasta. It's great like as a topping for like salmon. It's good on vegetables. Like it's seriously just like this MVP like condiment. So that's probably the best thing that I've eaten this month.
Do you make it like in a big batch?
And just I haven't, just because my blender sucks. And so it's like one of those blenders that's like orange and brown from the 60s and it looks really cool, but it doesn't actually work. So no, I make it in small batches and then it stays fresh, but you could definitely make it in a big batch and freeze it.
I'm gonna have to get you a new blender. You can use your old blender as a lamp.
Honestly, it would probably work better that way.
That's a wrap for this episode of Las Vegas Weekly's Second Helping. Thanks so much for joining us and listening. Extra special thanks go out to Mark Marone. You can eat his food, especially that burger, at Graffiti Bao. Find it at graffitibao.com. You can also check out what he's doing at localelv.com. And you can find those sandwiches of Egg Sammy on Facebook at Egg Sammy. You can also make a contribution to Delivering with Dignity, if you'd like, at deliveringwithdignitylv.org. Also, special thanks to Sonia Barcelona for lending us her song Violent Water to use with our podcast. You can find more music at artofsonia.com. And extra special thanks to everybody at Las Vegas Weekly for supporting our show
for this first year. You can find past episodes at lasvegasweekly.com/podcasts, and you can listen and subscribe to Second Helping at Apple Podcasts. Thanks again. See you next month.